This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of stories and song with a Broadway star, a celebration of a cultural milestone, or a night of Yuletide carols, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Two-time Tony Award winner Christine Ebersole is heading to New Orleans for the acclaimed Broadway at Noka series, presented by Mark Cortelli. The singer-actress, known for her award-winning roles in Grey Gardens and 42nd Street, will join music director and host Seth Rudetsky and composer Scott Frankel in an intimate evening of stories and song. Christine Ebersole joins us now by phone. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks for having me.
Christine, will this be a debut appearance for you in New Orleans?
No.
No.
I actually was in New Orleans in 1980 with Richard Burton in Camelot. What's it called? The Sanger? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called The Sanger.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was.
And it's been magnificently renovated since Katrina.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
I hear it's amazing.
So tell us, what are you looking forward to while in the city?
Well, it'll be a short trip, but not without its excitement, because I'll be working with Seth and Mark Cortelli and Scott Frankel, so it'll be a party.
Your Broadway career is extensive, most recently starring in War Paint as Elizabeth Arden. What was it like playing opposite Patti LuPone as Helena Rubinstein?
I was very thrilled and excited to be a part of this wonderful production, and I think working with Patti was kind of the best part of it, because she really is like her own force field. And you know, there's quite a lot to learn from that. And I just really had the best time. I really did.
And I hear there was a show-stopping song that you performed, Pink?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I'll admit, I did have the best song in the show.
Tell us more about that performance.
It's really written like an aria. It's like an entire play in a song. And so it just really kind of runs the gamut of emotion. It was thrilling to sing it every single night.
Is that all I'm worth to them? A color? Pink.
Is that my only claim to fame? Pink. My shot at permanent acclaim. Pink. My legend branded with a rose, immortalized in poems.
Kind of about her life, you know, looking back on it and where she's come and what's it all about, Alfie, and, you know, all that.
Except it's what's it all about, Elizabeth Arden.
Exactly.
Scott Frankel actually composed that show-stopping song, Pink.
Yes, I think he's a genius. I really do. Don't know how he does it. What he draws from, just his musicality and his intelligence. It's really quite something. And he's really funny. And I adore him. I'm just so thrilled to be thought of, which he has said, as his muse, to be able to sing what he has created.
Have you guys worked together for a while?
Well, Grey Gardens, that's where I first met him, I would say, you know, maybe 15 years.
Your roles as Edith Beale and Little Edie Beale in Grey Gardens has been described as a role of a lifetime. How did it come about for you, and what was it like when you won the Tony Award?
Well, it came about with Scott Frankel, once again, who had me in mind to play the role. It was probably about 3 or 4 years in the making, 5 years in the making. And winning the Tony, that was the second Tony that I won. And, you know, I'm ultimately so appreciative of getting the award, but it's not without pressure, you know, it's not without expectation. So it is somewhat fraught, those award shows. And that's, of course, not why we're in the business, to get awards. But like I say, ultimately, I'm so appreciative that my hard work is recognized.
You said that Grey Gardens was one of your Tony Award-winning roles. The other is 42nd Street?
Yeah, that was the first.
Take us back a little further in time. When did you know that a stage career was your calling, and how did you initially make it to Broadway?
Well, I don't know that I would think it was a career on a stage. It was just kind of, you know, being in show business, being an actor, you know, being an entertainer. That was kind of the idea behind it, you know, wherever direction that took me. I was at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. I was in several singing groups and was involved in the theater department. And the professor said, don't stay here. I was in a production of Cherry Orchard, and I was also in a production of Little Foxes. And he said, don't stay here. You need to go to New York. You need to go to New York and pursue this. I thought it was a very brave thing for him to say, you know.
Yeah.
And so I did. I left. I went and I got accepted to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And I left school and came to New York when I was 20. And with my parents' blessing, you know, that doesn't generally happen. I went to the American Academy for 2 years, and I graduated in 75. Then I started waiting tables so I could support myself. And it was from there, you know, the following January in 76, that I got the job on Broadway. Angel Street was a play. And I also sang in nightclubs. When I was at the American Academy, I auditioned at the Continental Baths, you know, where Bette Midler first started out. And Ted Hook, who was the proprietor there, he said, I don't think this is your kind of place, but here's a place that I think would be good for you. And it was a place called Gypsies, which was a club on 58th and 1st. So while I was still at the American Academy, which was not really encouraged, I sang clubs in New York as well. So it wasn't until later that I ended up combining those forces and did a musical.
You have a very rich background. In addition to your stage career, you also have appeared in several films. Amadeus and Tootsie come to mind. What can we look forward to in your upcoming performance in New Orleans? How will your story unfold?
Well, that depends on Seth Rudetsky and what questions he asks me. It's always surprising, you know.
I understand that he's known for keeping his cards close to his vest, but has he hinted as to what he might ask you to sing?
We definitely go over, you know, what we're going to sing, but how we get there is always new and fresh. Seth is really just a master at bringing out the best in his subjects. It should be a lot of fun.
Tony Award-winning actress and singer Christine Ebersole, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I hope you enjoy New Orleans.
Thanks, Diane.
Well, I never even liked the color.
Mark Cartalli presents Broadway at NOCA with Tony Award-winning actress and singer Christine Ebersole, host Seth Rudetsky, and special guest composer Scott Frankel, Saturday, December 15th at NOCA, 2800 Charter Street. More info at BroadwayNOLA.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The Ashe Cultural Arts Center is celebrating its 20th anniversary. The nonprofit arts organization, co-founded by Carol Bebel and the late Douglas Redd, continues to serve the community with programs, activities, and creative works focusing on the contributions of people of African descent. We travel down memory lane with Carol Bebel. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's always good to be here and talk to you.
And congratulations. This is a big one.
It is, definitely. Every nonprofit doesn't make 20 years. And so that's the first blessing. And to have a focus and a mission that is not so easily translated to people. So we're not like an education or health or doing just social programs, you know, and so that makes the pride a little bit stronger that we could have something that was so nuanced that could manage to make it for 20 years.
Take us back to the beginning. Let's first start with the word Ashe. How did you come to choose that and what does it mean?
We were thinking about how we could manage to both give an indication of our connection to Africanity, but also to give ourselves a charge and a mission. And so the word Ashe comes from the people of West Africa, the Yoruba people, and it comes closest to meaning amen. So it's like the ability to make things happen. But it also is a mission and a charge to us who are carrying that as our banner to take a stand in the world and to make things happen. It means bridging in some instance. It means advancing in some instances, kind of moving something from inactive to active. And that could be conversation. It could be provocative by virtue of the artwork that we wind up using. And we're trying to do that with a perspective that is African at its core, African-American, diasporic. We're really trying to emerge the perspective on people of African descent, our history. We're completing the narrative. We're trying to help us connect better to ourselves. And we're wanting to be able to essentially put out the story about who we are so that others can connect better to us as well.
How did you make that leap of faith to start a cultural institution?
Douglas Ritt and I had been working together for a while. I had gotten to my kind of midlife crisis, the point where you realize, okay, I've gone to school, I've started working, and if God says the same, I'll be here for a while, and what do I want to be doing? Have I put everything in my life that I'd like to have? And I think Doug was in a similar situation where he had been really successful as a community artist. People knew him, work came in, he had a reputation for being someone who worked in the African aesthetic very deeply and very well. He was intuitive, greatly interpretive, definitely creative, and brilliant. And I think both of us were kind of in different places, but in the same place in a certain way, saying, is that all there is? I was already doing independent work. I'd stepped off from working in the public sector. And we got an invitation to have a breakfast with a developer who was developing in Central City. And she was trying to find a way to reanimate the boulevard.
This is Aretha Castle Haley.
Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. Kathy Laborde is her name. She said, you know, when's the last time you were on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard? And I realized that I generally, though I lived uptown at the time, I just didn't go up the boulevard because it really had fallen. Central City was one of the communities that was touted as being one that had real crime issues. And then inner city communities started changing. So anyways, she was looking at the beauty of the buildings and was also looking at the opportunity to be able to really reanimate the Central City area culturally. So when she asked us, you know, would you like an opportunity to be in one of these buildings or whatever, I wasn't necessarily feeling the pull to have a place, right? But Doug was a visionary. He understood the necessity of culture needing a place to be. And to Kathy's credit, she knew I was nervous about money. And so she said, I tell you what, you all can have the space, you know, get insurance, and you don't have to pay any rent until somebody else moves in. And the story built from there. We were then challenged with taking our ideas and making them real.
Do you feel that you have made the community culturally richer over the past 20 years?
I would hope that we have. And I would hope that we have been great students of the community. And in some instances, we've also been teachers. But most of all, I know that we've been a servant of the community. Right now, we're celebrating the near completion of our first major renovation since we've been the owners of the property. We're calling it our front room at this point in time. Part of what made it possible was that we built a in-community nursing station to welcome and invite mothers who are nursing to come by, to enjoy a place that's made just for them, because we are losing a lot of the willingness on the part of women to nurse because of how hard it is, not just in terms of work in those places, but like just moving in society. We've been working inside of that work with a project called Birthright to both support the moms, but as importantly, to start making space and awareness with other public places. There's a way in which we are interjecting into people's lives these cultural impulses on how it is that you stay in charge of evolving your culture and that you are conscious of how it is that you do that.
Wow. What milestones are you most proud of?
Oh, my goodness. Certainly signing the lease for the space would be one. The midnight vigil that we did 1999, 25 or 30 of us got together at Ashe, and in silence, we greeted the new millennium. Artists doing their art, writing or painting or whatever. The 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides and having them be completed at Ashe. These were the rides that got started and were interrupted in Mississippi. So they never made it to New Orleans. And so 50 years later, the remaining Freedom Riders who could manage the ride got together with some young people from schools across the country, and they completed the ride. It was amazing. The street was just full of people to greet them.
There was another milestone. You acquired more property.
Really? In 2009, we were able to buy the next door space that we call Ashe 2, T-O-O. And then we were able to purchase the apartments that are above Ashe. And now we are in a kind of a rent-to-purchase relationship for what is called the Ashe Powerhouse. So the campus has grown. Today, and probably for the last 5 to 7 years, we produce 1,000 or more events a year. We've had specific programming for children, for women, for men, and for elders.
Would you say the future is bright?
I would say that the future is bright, and the biggest reason is that there are more people in it.
Ashe co-founder, Carol Bebel, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
And best wishes moving forward.
Thank you for that, too.
The celebration kicks off Friday, December 14th, with a holiday luncheon at the Ashe Powerhouse, 1731 Barone Street. that on Saturday, December 15th, Ashe's 20th anniversary celebration gets underway with an evening of fun at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, beginning at 7 p.m. with entertainment by Sonny Patterson, Bambula 2000, and others. Both events are free and open to the public. More info at 569-9070. Over in the Marigny, Debbie Davis and Matt Perrine return with their musical holiday spectacular, Oh Crap, It's Christmas. The yearly concert features an all-star band and a host of local luminaries. Songstress Debbie Davis is here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you for having me.
This holiday musical has been going on for a little while. I believe that this was born out of a CD that you recorded?
The CD was actually born out of a collection of recordings that my husband, Matt Perrine, and I did starting in 2002 when we had very good intentions but absolutely no money, and recorded some songs as a musical Christmas card for our friends and family. And it went so well and people enjoyed it so much that we did it again the next year with another handful of songs. And I think it was 6 recording sessions in all that were then compiled into this CD called Oh Crap, It's Christmas, which was an inside joke among our family that we just couldn't shake. But it's 17 songs, and out of that recording that came out in 2014, this will now be our 4th live performance of the same name. And we have a lot of the same people in the band this year that we have had in past years. Great guitar player, songwriter, singer Alex McMurray, who has been a collaborator of Matt and mine for almost 20 years. Drummer Andre Bowren, Richard Scott on the accordion and piano, Jack Kraft on cello, Harry Harden on violin, and my husband Matt as musical director and on bass and upright bass and sousaphone and trombone. And I think that's it. He might do more. I'm not sure. I guess we'll see.
And your special guest this year?
We try to have different people every year, but there are always a few that make repeat performances. Josh Paxton, with whom I have had a musical relationship for 2 decades, I think it's 20 years this year, he just got married to another musical force of nature named Beth Patterson, who's widely known on the Celtic music circuit, and they're going to come and perform as special guests this year. My friend Spencer Bowen, who I've known almost as long as Josh, local troubadour, guitar player, songwriter, he and I are going to do a duet, and he's going to do a song by himself. Spencer, as you may have heard, has had some recent health issues, and we are so glad that he is fighting so hard to stay so well and come and join us. It's always special to work with Spencer, and I know this year's going to be no exception. Johnny Sketch and the Bandicoot 4, which are the 4 founding members of Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Mark Parody, also known as Johnny Sketch, Dave Pomerleau on bass, Harry Harden, who's also in our band, and Andre Bowren, who's also in the house band, are going to get together and do a couple of eclectic, I think is the word I'm going to go for, holiday selections that, if you knew what I knew, you'd know that it's worth the price of admission just to see the 4 of them get together and play. And my kids are both performing this year. Ben and Henry are both performing. My sister's coming in from Texas. My mom, who is an operatic soprano, from whom I get a lot of my musical inclinations, but none of my singing range, sang Oh Holy Night last year and just blew the roof off the sucker, as they say. She's going to come and do a couple songs again this year. And my acoustic and a cappella vocal trio group called the Jingle Bells, that's B-E-L-L-E-S, are also going to perform a couple of songs and a couple surprises that I won't give away, but suffice it to say, we are all approaching it with a great deal of enthusiasm and a little bit of fear. But it's going to be great. It's going to be so great this year. We're really excited.
So now let's talk about the name for this musical holiday spectacular.
Yes.
How did you come to it?
It came to me in October of 2002. I remember specifically because I was going into the Walgreens to buy Halloween candy. It was the week of Halloween, and I didn't have anything to give trick-or-treaters, and we were only a couple days away. So I went into the Walgreens to buy myself my obligatory bag of, you know, fun-sized whatever, Snickers and such. And where the candy should have been, they were stocking in Christmas stuff. They were putting in lights and stockings and all, you know, the stuff that was not supposed to be there quite yet. And I was heard to say in the Walgreens to no one in particular, "Oh, crap, it's Christmas." And then in the studio that same year when we were recording one of the first 5 songs that are on the record, somebody else said, "Oh, crap, it's Christmas." And Matt and I looked at each other and went, "Okay, that's the name of this now. That's obviously the name of this." But it was only supposed to stay between us and our friends and family and not at all extend to polite company.
Tell us about the songs that you will sing. What are some of your favorites?
It's not a secret that I'm a gigantic Christmas nerd. It's really about what I'm feeling at that particular moment, what's resonating with me that year. A lot of the songs that I'm doing are already on the record. I don't want to give too much away, but we're going to put a couple new songs in. One of them is off of my favorite modern Christmas record, which is called Christmas Caravan by the Squirrel Nut Zippers. And there's a song on it called Evergreen. Their recording of it is so perfect. I'm frankly not sure what we're going to do to expand or expound or improve upon it. It speaks to such simplicity of what the Yule season, not just what Christmas, but what the days of winter make you contemplate. We'll also have a tuba feature for Matt. It's nice that we get to revisit songs from the record, and it's nice that we get to explore new stuff with our audience. I feel like part of the nice thing about a Christmas tradition is that it's something familiar that you get to feel like you're experiencing for the first time again. So it hopefully that will resonate and that the show will be a nice mix of the familiar and the new. Everybody wants to feel like they're going to open something under the tree that's going to be different than last year, but something they recognize. So that's what we try to make this show feel like.
And your hope for folks this holiday season?
My hope is that we can go into a new year where there's kindness and empathy and willingness to be our best selves for each other.
Singer, songwriter, Debbie Davis.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
Debbie Davis and Matt Perrine present Oh Crap, It's Christmas, a musical holiday spectacular at Cafe Istanbul, 2372 St. Claude Avenue, Sunday, December 16th at 7 p.m. More info at ohcrapitschristmas.com.
Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away.
That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.